Hi there and welcome. This is Amanda, the founder of Astrology Hub, and you're listening to our Week Ahead Snapshot with world-class astrologer, historian, and author of The Cosmic Calendar, Christopher Renstrom. This show is designed to give you a quick overview of the week ahead, enabling you the gift of choice in how you navigate and weave these energies into your daily life. Enjoy.
This podcast episode is sponsored by Astrology Hub's Academy. Wherever you are on your astrology journey, we have a class that will help you get to the next level.
Hello, my name is Christopher Renstrom, and this week I wanted to talk to you about the Sun in Gemini forming a square to Saturn in Pisces on May 28th. Now let's take a moment to break that down. We have the Sun in Gemini, which is the sign of the twins. We often think of the twins as being very mercurial, very quick on their feet, very intellectual, analytical, and very, very conversant, wonderfully conversational, very friendly and chummy, and easy to get along with. But what's also encoded in the zodiac sign of the twins, which is the first of the three air signs, and all the air signs deal with relationships, what's encoded in the zodiac sign of the twins is the idea of sibling rivalry. It's as old as Cain and Abel. And if you remember the book of Genesis, you know how that all turned out. The idea of the twins is that you have two people who look exactly alike, which is kind of a fun thing if you're plotting a Disney comedy like The Parent Trap, but is a very different thing to live with in your day-to-day life. Having a sibling who resembles you, in which people might confuse you with your sibling, or even compare you to your sibling, can be a very difficult sort of proposition, particularly relationally. You might be best buddies with your sibling, or you might be the fiercest of rivals. So this idea of rivalry and competition is always in the background with the Sun in Gemini. Now, I'm not saying that everyone born under Gemini is going to be horribly competitive, but what I am going to say about people who are born under the zodiac sign of Gemini is that they have a little bit of a sore spot when it comes to the idea of favoritism. That is the idea of them being compared to someone else who may very well have been a sibling. Perhaps if you were born under the zodiac sign of Gemini, or you might have had issues with a sibling. Perhaps if you were born under the zodiac sign of Gemini, you might have had a sibling, or maybe it was a best friend, someone whom you were always being compared to. Maybe this person was prettier than you. Maybe this person was smarter than you. Maybe this person was more athletic, or maybe they were funnier. But in some way, you might have been made to feel either like you were coming up short in comparison to this person, or if you were the one who was being praised as prettier or smarter or more athletic or etc., you might have felt a bit guilty about the fact that your sibling or friend was always kind of the lesser light, and that might have made you self-conscious in some way and feeling kind of like bad for that person and also bad for yourself. So this is a sort of issue that kind of plays underneath the surface with many Geminis. They'll often laugh it off or treat it as no big deal, but underneath that idea of favoritism, of competing for the favoritism of someone in authority, is pretty much at the base of many Gemini psyches. Now we have this square that's taking place with the planet Saturn in the zodiac sign of Pisces. Let me first address the Saturn. Saturn is squaring the Sun. A square, as we all know, has a tendency to be combative. The two planets are going to be fighting for the upper hand in the relationship. That can be something as innocent and annoying as always having to have the last word, or it can come across as a really vigorous one-upmanship that can sort of make for some bad scenes, especially in relationships. So you can have a square between these two planets. The Sun is basically the source of vitality and heat and light. And Saturn in many ways in astrology is regarded as being the antithesis of the Sun. If the Sun is warm, Saturn is cold. If the Sun is light, Saturn is dark. If the Sun is more upbeat and optimistic, Saturn is more pessimistic and a bit of a wet blanket. So in a square, Saturn is basically kind of the spoiler in this relationship. Imagine the Sun in Gemini getting in front of a whole bunch of people and sort of telling a fun story and everyone's laughing and the Gemini is like, okay, well, here's another fun fact or here's another, you know, twist to this story, whatever. You know, Saturn is the one in the room who's like, please, that's not the way it happened. Or that fun fact is poorly researched. This is what really happened. And it's basically the one who's maybe criticizing or raining on the parade or spoiling the fun. Okay, so this is the way that Saturn will play out in a square with the Sun, particularly in Gemini. There's a little bit of that one-upmanship that's going to come up. But what's also happening is Saturn is going to be bringing out the anxiety of Gemini energy. Gemini energy, as I said before, is very word perfect. It really has a great love of words and a great love of conversation. And Gemini likes to engage people. Gemini is also ruled by Mercury, and Mercury rules the mind. So communicating is very important and being smart is very important. Geminis usually are very smart and actually will place more faith in their intellectual abilities than other faculties that one might have. So with the Saturn square in Pisces, what's coming up here is things that are more of a Piscean nature. And when we think of Pisces, we think of soulful, we think of mysticism, we think of things that are mysterious in nature, particularly in an otherworldly sort of way. Pisces has a great love of the invisible world, and it places its trust in things that cannot be explained, whether it's paranormal activities or profound and very soulful experiences. Gemini may be interested or intrigued by something like that, but it gets a little bit uncomfortable with things that can't really be explained easily. As I was saying before, Gemini has a tendency to ally more with its mind over its feelings. And when you're talking about Pisces, you're talking about feelings, very deep and profound and soulful feelings. What you're also talking about with Pisces, and it's going to tie into the story that I'm going to begin to tell you shortly, what you also have connected to Pisces is forgiveness. Okay. It's love and forgiveness, particularly unconditional love and forgiveness. Many Pisceans can be in a place where they can let the bygones be bygones, where they can let the bad things leave their life. I mean, there will always be the pain and the ache, but Pisces can't help but try to understand, or actually really naturally understand and empathize with people who have done bad things. They're not condoning it. They're not supporting it. But it will be the Pisces who will ask, well, was there a problem with the parents? Was it a troubled home? Was this person damaged goods? Was this person just never shown the love and the understanding? So Pisces is always looking for the emotional history, the emotional background to someone's life, where other signs can be like, well, that person's a cad, that person cheated, that person did horrible things. How could you possibly have any kind of empathy or understanding? Pisces often can't help it. They just have that natural empathy. And believe me, it's created more than just a few awkward situations for them. So what we can have here with the Sun in Gemini squaring a Saturn in Pisces is the idea of a mind, Gemini, Sun in Gemini, a mind wanting to be at peace with itself. But the square to Saturn in Pisces is symbolizing or begging the question of something that is making this mind restive. It's making this mind restless. It's making this mind full of doubt and maybe even guilt. All right. So there's something, there's a voice in the back of the head where a situation hasn't sat right. And it's that voice, that doubt about whether you had acted appropriately or whether you were understanding enough or whether you had truly made peace or maybe even acknowledged a rivalry that you had brought to a situation that might be increasing in volume. Now, the story that I wanted to share with you this week to illustrate this sun in Gemini, the sign of the twins, square Saturn in Pisces, an uneasy conscience, or perhaps even a guilty secret. The story that I wanted to share with you this week is the story of Jacob and Esau. And that appears in Genesis 25, 26 to Genesis 32, 33. And the story of Jacob and Esau starts like this. Now, Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah. Now, for us, 40 years is like, okay, that's no big deal. But back in the Bible age, marrying at the age of 40 was pretty old, okay? So the story begins with Isaac, who marries Rebekah when he's 40. And Isaac prayed to Yahweh on behalf of his wife, for Rebekah was barren. Yahweh heard Isaac's prayer, and Rebekah conceived. But the children struggled within Rebekah's womb. They struggled so much, night and day, uninterrupted, that Rebekah was in great pain and in great agony carrying these children in her womb. And she said, "If this is the way of it, why go on living?" She went to consult Yahweh herself. And Yahweh said to Rebekah, "There are two nations in your womb. Your issue will be two rival peoples. One nation shall have mastery over the other, and the elder shall serve the younger." So Rebekah got her answer as to why there was difficulty, why she was suffering so much pain. But also the information that she got was a bit cryptic. It's not the same information that Isaac had gotten. I mean, Isaac had a relationship with the Lord where he could pray on Rebekah's behalf to have children. And so the Lord opens up Rebekah's womb. But Rebekah gets this almost cryptic answer from the Lord that there are two babies and they will become two warring nations and one will have mastery over the other and it will be the younger who rules the elder. So that's a bit of a weird headspace to be in before giving birth to your children. So when the time for her confinement came, there were indeed twins in her womb. The firstborn was a boy, and the firstborn, the boy, was red. And it was almost, they described him as though he were almost wrapped in hairy red cloth. And so they named him Esau, which means red. And then Esau's brother was born. Okay, so Esau was the firstborn, and his brother was born. And when his brother was born and came out of the womb, his brother was holding on to, he was clutching the ankle of Esau. So they deliver Esau, who's all red and hairy, and right behind him is this hand, you know, and they sort of pull the other baby out, and the hand is clutching with an absolute grip on the heel of his brother Esau. That is how vigorously these two babies were struggling with one another in the womb. And so they named the second boy, the younger twin, Jacob. And Jacob means one that takes by the heel. The name Jacob also means a supplanter. Now, when the boys grew up, Esau became a skilled hunter. He was a man of the open country. He went out there and hunted, and he killed game, and he, you know, carried them back on his shoulders to camp. You know, other people might drag the game or bring a wagon or something like that, but not Esau. He was very manly with his red, hairy breast and shoulders, and he would go and kill game and put them on his shoulders and come back to camp and, you know, Esau. Okay. And so Esau was very vigorous and very virile and manly man. All right. Now, Jacob's the opposite. Jacob hung out among the tents and among the women. And Jacob was very quiet and a bit soft-spoken and very reflective. So Jacob was much more of a contemplative, an intellectual type of personality. And so Isaac, because he loved the deer and the elk or the antelope or whatever Esau was hunting for out there, you know, and he loved them. And Esau coming back and looking all brawny, Isaac loved Esau because he was like vigorous and brawny and fun, you know. And Rebecca, of course, preferred Jacob. Now, once Jacob had made soup, it was in the soup kettle, okay, and he had made soup. And on this particular instance, Esau had returned from the country and, you know, he sits down in the tent. He's like, oh, you know, I'm exhausted, you know, like this very burly, right? And he said, what are you making? And Jacob said, I'm making soup, red soup. And Esau, because his name means red, has this thing for red. I don't know. But anyway, Esau is like, red soup. Let me have some of that soup. I'm so starving. I could eat a horse. And so Jacob says, well, first you have to sell me your birthright, you know. And Esau said, here I am at death's door. What use do I have for a birthright? And then Jacob said, well, then get me your oath. And so Esau's like, here's my oath. I'm so hungry. Birthright isn't going to like fill my stomach. I want that soup, and I want that soup right now. And so Esau gave Jacob his oath, he gave him his word, and in that moment sold him his birthright. And Jacob immediately went up and got the red lentil soup and some bread and served it to Esau. You know, and Esau, you know, chewed the bread and slurped up the soup, and everything was fine, except that Esau had sold his birthright to Jacob. Now, over the years, Isaac had grown old. Isaac had grown old and his eyes had grown weak, so he couldn't really see very well. And one day he summoned his son Esau, and he said, Esau, take your quiver and take your bow and go into the country and hunt me some game. Make me the kind of savory I like and bring it to me so that I may eat and give you my blessing before I die. And so Esau was like, sure, Pop, on it. You know, he got up out of the tent and he went out to go get some game and prepare it in the way that his father liked so he could receive his blessing. Now, Rebecca happened to be listening at that moment, and she quickly rushed to Jacob, who was sitting there among the tents. And she said, I just heard your father tell your brother Esau, bring me some game and make that savory that I like, and I will bless you in the presence of Yahweh before I die. Now, Jacob, listen to me and do as I say. Go to the flock and bring me back two kids so that I can make the savory your father likes and that he may bless you before he dies. But Jacob, suddenly frightened and anxious, said to his mother, Mother, look, my brother Esau is hairy while I am smooth-skinned. My father touches me, he'll know that I'm cheating him. And Rebecca's response was, get the goats. So Jacob went off to go and get the goats, just like his mother had ordered. And when Jacob returned to Rebecca, Rebecca said, here, put these on. And Jacob was like, what are they? And she's like, Esau's best clothes. Put his clothes on. And so Jacob, you know, quickly put on his brother's clothes. And then Rebecca said, give me your arms. And Jacob was like, yeah, here are my arms. And she took the hair of the goats and she wrapped them around his arms. And she's like, you're not hairy enough. So she also took the hair of the goats and maybe wrapped it around his neck. Esau was a pretty hairy guy and maybe a little bit around the ears and things like that. So that, you know, he really appeared or felt hairy to the touch. And then she handed Jacob the savory and the bread to take to his father. And so Jacob entered his father's tent and said, Father, I am here. And Isaac said, who are you, my son? Because remember, he had weak eyesight at this point. And Jacob said, I am Esau, your firstborn. Please take the meal I have brought and give me your blessing. And Isaac said, how quickly you have returned. Come here and let me touch you so that I may know if you are my son Esau or not. So Jacob, a little bit nervous, sort of came over to his father and leaned close, and Isaac touched him. He touched around the neck. He touched around the ears. Jacob's like watching him as these hands are going over him. He touched his beard. She had fashioned him a beard too. She had touched his beard and his arms and his hands. And then he said, Isaac said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the arms are Esau. Are you really my son, Esau? And Jacob said, I am. Come closer and kiss me, my son. So Jacob went closer and kissed his father, who smelled the smell of Esau's clothes on him and blessed him. Yes, yes, the smell of my son is like the smell of a fertile field blessed by Yahweh. May God give you dew from heaven and the richness of the earth, abundance of grain and wine. May nations serve you and people bow down before you. Cursed be he who curses you, and blessed be he who blesses you. And as soon as Isaac finished blessing Jacob departed nervously and frightened, and Esau returned. And Esau said, Father, get up! Eat the game your son has brought you and give him your blessing. And Isaac said, Who are you? And Esau said, I am your firstborn, Esau. And Isaac was suddenly seized with fear and trembling. Isaac, who was it then? Who was it then who went hunting and brought me game? Unsuspecting, I ate before you came. I blessed him, and blessed he will remain. When Esau heard his father's words, he cried out, Father, bless me too. And his father Isaac said, Your brother came by fraud and took your blessing. And Esau said, Have you not kept a blessing for me? And Isaac said, I have made him your master. I have given him all his brothers as servants. I have provided him with grain and wine. What can I do for you? And Esau, was that your only blessing, Father? Father, please, give me your blessing too. Please, Father, give me your blessing too. And Isaac remained silent. Fearing Esau's fury, Rebekah told Jacob to take refuge with her brother Laban in Haran. She said, leave immediately. Go to my brother Laban in Haran, leave. Stay with him a while until your brother's fury cools. And so Jacob, stripping off the clothes and the hair, immediately packing a quick bag, fled, and he fled to his uncle Laban in Haran. He fled. He fled day and night and night and day to a point of sheer and utter exhaustion, driven by the fear of his brother's fury and the vengeance and what he had done, that he had stolen the blessing from his own blind father. And so he came to this place, and the sun was going down, and it was starting to get cold, and he had really nothing but his own cloak and the clothes that he was wearing. And he took a stone, a flat, smooth stone, but heavy. He took that stone and he moved it against the side of some other pile of rocks. And that stone he would make his pillow, Jacob's pillow. And that night he slept with his head on that stone. And Jacob had a dream. He dreamt with his head asleep on that stone. He dreamt of a ladder. He saw a ladder there standing on the ground in front of him, a ladder whose top reached all the way to heaven. The ladder reached from the ground next to him all the way up to the heavenly stars themselves. And on that ladder, there were angels of the Lord. There were angels of the Lord who were descending and ascending quietly between heaven and earth, coming down to earth, turning around, and beginning their ascent once more up to heaven in this nonstop motion, going up and coming down. And Yahweh was there, standing over him. And he said, I am Yahweh, the God of Abraham and Isaac, and I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants shall be like specks of dust on the ground. You shall spread to the west and to the east. You shall spread to the north and to the south. And all the tribes of the earth shall bless themselves by you and your descendants. Be sure that I am with you. I will keep you safe wherever you go and bring you back to this land, for I will not desert you before I have done all that I have promised you. And Jacob woke up, moved by this experience, moved by this paternal love. And he continued his journey to his mother's brother's, Laban's, camp. There's a whole story that takes place with Laban and his two daughters, Leah and Rachel, and that is a story that I will tell for another time. But what I wanted to sort of share from the gist of that story is that Jacob isn't immediately greeted with welcome arms by Laban. Laban, you know, greets Jacob and puts him immediately to work. And Jacob, you know, has eyes for his younger daughter, Rachel. Laban has two daughters, Leah and Rachel. And he works for 7 years for Laban and in order to marry Rachel, and then on his wedding night is deceived, much like the way that he deceived his father. He's deceived. And when he lifts the bridal veil, it's Leah and not Rachel whom he has married. And he's aghast and angry that he's been cheated, you know. And Laban says, well, you can go work another 7 years and you could have my daughter Rachel's hand in marriage. And so he works another 7 years and is also able to wed Rachel as well. And of course, Leah and Rachel are very jealous of one another, or at least Leah is jealous of Rachel. But anyway, he's worked 7 years and then 14 years. I think you can hear the Saturn in all of that. He's able to marry the daughters. But during this time, he also becomes a tremendous financial success. So successful is Jacob with raising sheep and the way that mate and cattle and they multiply. So successful that he earns the envy and he earns the hostility of Laban and his sons. And so he escapes with his wives and his slaves and his property that he can carry. And Laban and his sons are, you know, disgruntled. And they even pursue him on foot and they make peace. But after they make peace, Jacob wants to go home. But in order to do that, he has to make peace with his brother Esau. And so that's where we're picking up the narrative again. And we're going to look for the theme that I mentioned earlier of the sun square Saturn. So on the night before he's to meet his brother, he's full of fear and trembling about meeting his brother. He knows he did his brother ill will. He knows that he stole the blessing. And he just knows, you know, it's kind of that sibling thing. He's going to kill me. You know, it's like, have you ever had like an older, they're going to kill me or they're going to just wish me harm. So he's really, Jacob has really sort of whipped himself into a panic and into a frenzy about meeting his brother again. And he's immediately trying to figure out, I'll give him gifts, I'll show him obedience, I will lower myself to him, and all these sorts of things, just so that he won't smite me or take away my things, and I've done horrible things, and I'm guilty. And so that night, Jacob has another dream. Remember, he had a dream That's the Saturn in the Pisces. He had the dream of the splendid ladder, and now he has another dream. Except it's not really called a dream, although it's pretty much a dream, or it's an hallucination. Or let me tell you the story. That night, in the middle of the night, Jacob can't sleep. He's so restless. He's so full of fear. He can't sleep, and he gets up from his bed and he meets a stranger. It's a shadow figure in the dark that he can't really see. And he doesn't recognize. He doesn't recognize the voice. He can't see the features. Imagine a silhouette in dark. Okay. It's the silhouette that just, you know, in the dark, you can make out rocks or ground or something like that. But it's a silhouette in the dark in which you can't see the outline of the rocks or the land anymore. It's the silhouette of a figure that is standing there opposite him. And so he tries to pass this figure, and this figure immediately makes a grab for him. And Jacob is like, you know, let me go, you know. And if you've ever had a night terror, you cry out, but you know you're not being heard, you know. And he's like, let me go. And he's crying out. And this figure grasps Jacob closely to him. And it's hurting, you know. It's combat. It's a wrestling match. And so Jacob tries to pry the arms from around him, and he pushes back against this figure. And this figure turns him around, and Jacob turns around the figure, and this figure throws Jacob on the ground. And Jacob gets up, and he pushes and he throws this figure on the ground. And the figure gets up and twists him around, and Jacob twists him around. And they're just evenly matched. It's a vigorous battle, wrestling match that they're having. And Jacob is so full of fear and anger, but he's not going to let this figure best him, no matter what. Okay. And so it's at that moment that there's the gleam of daybreak. The first rays of the sun appear on the horizon, and the figure, you know, Jacob can see the silhouette of the head face him, although he can't make out the features. And so this figure immediately strikes, okay, Jacob in the socket of his hip. And Jacob screams with pain because his hip has been dislocated. You know, but he still stands. And he grabs for the figure. Remember, Jacob has been grabbing since he was in the womb. And he grabs for the figure, you know, who's trying to leave because the figure is obviously distressed that day is breaking. And the figure says to Jacob, let me go, for day is breaking. And Jacob answers, I will not let you go until you bless me. Okay. And so he says, you know, until you bless me, which is kind of you give me something, you give me blessing. And a blessing, we think of like a virtue or a recognition, but blessing can also mean a protection. Okay. And then the figure asked, what is your name? And Jacob answers, Jacob. And the figure says, Your name shall no longer be Jacob. Your name instead will be Israel. And because you have been strong against God, you shall prevail against all men. And then Jacob then made this request. Jacob said, well, tell me your name. I beg to know, what is your name? And the figure replied, why do you ask my name? And Jacob is like, and the figure blesses him right there on the spot. And at that moment, when Jacob looks up from having been blessed, the sun has risen, the figure is gone, and Jacob gets up very much in pain, and he limps back to camp. And there's a reason, they say, there's a reason why the Israelites do not eat the sciatic nerve, which is in the socket of the hip, because this figure had struck Jacob in the socket of the hip and on the sciatic nerve. So this is a fascinating section right here. We know that Jacob is a very competitive figure. He wanted to be born first. He's holding on to the ankle of Esau when Esau's born. You know, one day in frivolity and laughter and joking, and Esau's really hungry, you know, he makes Esau swear to give Jacob his birthright. And then this becomes an actual blessing, recognition. The younger is seen as being superior to the elder. The younger takes the birthright, which was unheard of in these customs, through the blessing of Isaac. Isaac, who is blind or very, very feeble-sighted. Jacob is driven by a guilty conscience and fear. Saturn, Pisces, squaring Sun in Gemini, he's driven by a fear to Laban, who is the brother, sibling, okay, brother of Rebecca. And Laban immediately puts him to these tasks of very hard work and deceives him in a parallel deception by marrying his first daughter to him, because Laban has two daughters. You always marry the first daughter first. Okay. Jacob is in love with Rachel, but the first daughter, the older daughter, is always married first. That's the custom. And then for another 7 years, Jacob labors and he gets to marry Rachel, whom he loves very dearly. So there's that kind of parallel, that mirror thing that happens. So that when, and then again, Jacob is becoming the object of hostility here. He's too successful. And so it's brought envy among Rebecca, Rebecca's relatives of her brother's children. And so they're after Jacob. They run him out of town, basically, and he has to go back to where he was. And it's this night before he meets Esau in which an incredible thing happens. It's the fulfillment of Jacob's ladder, of the ladder dream. And it's a fulfillment because in the ladder dream, he is given a promise by Yahweh of a land, okay, of a land. But the land isn't named. And Yahweh says, this land will be you. And as long as you are true to this land and return to this land, you know, you will have my blessing. And so it's only in this dream with the dark other. I mean, we know it as wrestling with the angel, but it's never called an angel. Angels are referred to in the ladder to heaven. Okay, angels are openly referred to as ascending and descending the ladder. This dark entity is never called an angel in the Bible. It's called He, and that's it. There's no name to it. And it's so intriguing. Because what you're really seeing here is the Saturn, the shadow, the dark secret, the guilt that's coming out. You know, what's the thing that's going to keep Jacob from becoming, from fulfilling his birthright? Okay. The thing that's going to keep Jacob from fulfilling his birthright is his sin. It's his sin that he had done badly. You know, it's his guilt and it's his fear. Okay. And so when he confronts this dark being and they wrestle, Jacob could have said, uncle, or I give up, or stop it, you know, or like, I'm too afraid to wrestle. I'm going to run and hide and hide myself among the tents, you know. But he doesn't. He's dragged into the wrestling match. I mean, you know, Jacob's not like, I'm at it. You know what I mean? It's not like that. He's dragged into this wrestling match with this dark and very frightening pitch black being. But he gives as well as he gets in this match. And it's only when dawn is breaking that this entity has to leave. But it's also when dawn is breaking that this entity knows that Jacob is ready to become Israel. Okay. He dislocates Jacob at the hip. There's always this kind of spiritual wound that someone is dealt. He dislocates him at the hip. So now he limps, and for the rest of his life, he will limp. Which, by the way, is a Saturnian reference. Saturn is often portrayed on crutches and as crippled in some way. And so Jacob is crippled through this encounter with Saturn in the dark. But he has proved that he has risen to that occasion. He's proved that he can now be renamed, reborn Israel, that he is the land that Yahweh promised to him. He is, Jacob is the land. And what's kind of fascinating is that is the hip, the dislocation of the hip. The hip region is associated with the sacral chakra, and that's the second chakra in the body. And it's an energetic center, believed by some to house creative energy and sexuality. It's also related to how you relate to your emotions. Now, what's interesting about its connection to creativity and sexuality, you get procreation. Throughout the story of Jacob, you have this great fear and anxiety of women being barren, okay? And it's kind of women's wombs being barren, and then they're suddenly opened up. Well, as we all know, it's not just the women who might be having the problem. It might be the guy who's shooting empty blanks, you know, or what is it? Shooting blanks. It might be the guy who's shooting blanks. And so that might be where the miracle needs to take place. So that's kind of the way that I see with the striking in the hip and the dislocation of it is perhaps an opening up of Jacob's fertility, because it's only after this encounter with the dark entity that Jacob is able to beget children, Leah starts to have children and Rachel starts to have children. They weren't having children before this encounter. But what we also have here is literally wrestling with the guilty conscience. Okay, he is full of fear and guilt of having to see his brother Esau again. And this is when the encounter takes place. I've also read that this chakra center is also associated with fear and especially the fear of death. And in the story, Jacob is absolutely afraid for his life of facing Esau. But what I also find interesting, I just can't help it, is, you know, the phrase joined at the hip? joined at the hip is, you know, it's a reference to people being inseparable. Actually, it has its origins, not from the greatest place, but it has its origins in Siamese twins who were often seen or depicted or talked about as being joined at the hip, you know, and could only be separated, you know, at the hip from one another. But this idea of joined at the hip and that there's been a dislocation, a severance of the hip. There's been a severance between him and Esau. Before there wasn't one, Jacob was taking flight. He was running away from a bad thing he had done. And so here there's the actual dislocation of the hip. That he's gone from, he's been transformed from the birthright and his father's blessing to Israel itself. And so this is how he's coming back to Esau. And this is what I love so much about the Bible and what I love so much about Greek mythology is that these are stories of human beings. These are ultimately human stories and very real stories. No one's holier than thou or better than. I mean, the gods act like mortals all the time. And the characters in the Bible are remarkably and recognizably very, very human, even if they're transporting with God or having these supernatural events take place in their lives. So Jacob is returning to Esau, and he's sent people ahead, and he sent gifts ahead, and he's still full of fear and trembling. And so he comes and he, you know, sees his brother for the first time in decades, really. And what's great is that, you know, Jacob is expecting retribution and anger. And instead, Esau runs towards his brother. He embraces Jacob. He falls on his neck and he kisses him. Okay, so here Jacob is, you know, not so certain. And Esau, with his exuberance, you know, man of open fields and wild game slung on shoulders, he runs to his brother. He embraces him. He holds him by the neck and he kisses him on the cheek. He is so happy to see his brother again, and so delighted and so full of joy, all right? And it's fascinating the way that this encounter ends. It's Jacob who is remote. It's Jacob who is removed. Esau tries to give him gifts. You know, Esau's like, I'm not interested in your gifts or your offerings. Here are my gifts. Here are my offerings. You know, I'm embracing you, brother. I haven't seen you in so long. You know, and it's Jacob who's declining the gifts. It's Jacob who's, you know, no, you don't have to do this for me. No, this is unnecessary. Jacob's kind of like the dinner guest who isn't openly saying that they don't like the meal, you know, and so it's kind of like clear that Jacob is, he's happy to see his brother, but he's not. And I find that so fascinating that this is kind of really the way that this particular part of the story ends. And it's this idea that Jacob doesn't want to owe Esau anything. And if you have had a sibling, and if there's been sibling tensions or whatever, there's always kind of like that little thing that stays there. And it begs the question with this scene coming at the end of this particular story, is it shame that makes Jacob remote? You know, shame that his brother could be so generous, shame that his brother actually could have cared less, you know, shame that his brother is happy to see him and embrace him. You know, is it shame that makes Jacob quiet and removed? Or is there still a one-upmanship that's going on? Is there still, you know, that one-upmanship, that discomfort that he's always had with his brother? And I find it absolutely fascinating that that's the last scene and so very telling of the Sun in Gemini squaring the Saturn in Pisces. A square is not going to be resolved. You're not going to have a happy ending. If a planet squares your planet, you know, if a planet squares one planet in your astrological chart, they're going to always be in conflict. You know, again, one of them has to have the last word, or one of them's just like, I'm not going to associate with you. No matter how much the other planet, you know, is welcoming or whatever, that planet is not going to associate. And that sort of like brings up the Sun-Saturn square. There's that Saturn side of Jacob, that Saturn side, which was, I wasn't first. I wasn't the chosen one. I wasn't the right one. I wasn't the one that my father really loved. You know, I've been deceived, I've been cheated, or maybe even the idea of, you know, having to deceive as a means to an end. This is what you do when you're the younger one, you know, when you're not going to have the benefits that the older one or the favored one is going to get. You know, you have to use your wiles, you have to use your smarts to turn the tables, you know, but even at the end, when he's turned the tables, I mean, we have to remember when he greets his brother Esau, Jacob has the birthright, okay? When he greets his brother Esau, Jacob has Isaac's blessing. When he greets his brother Esau, Jacob has been renamed Israel. So Jacob has all of the things that one should want to have. He's got the blessings. He's got the right. He's got the name. He's got the title. But still, it's not enough. Not that he's greedy or anything like that. He's not, but it's not enough. It doesn't silence or calm what troubles him, so deep in his soul. It doesn't calm that. It doesn't pacify that. And that in turn, Saturn square the Sun, you know, he faces his brothers, Esau, and Esau could care less about Jacob's guilty secret, but Jacob now has a renewed guilty secret, which is his inability to truly embrace his brother and the isolation and the apartness that that brings. Now we know from the book of Genesis that the story continues. Like that story that I told you of the Greek intergenerational problems, which keep going until Orestes reconciles it, in the story of the Furies that I told a couple of weeks back, The same thing is the book of Genesis. There are things that are passed down from one generation to the next, to the next, to the next. The book of Genesis is completely about sibling rivalry. It begins with Cain and Abel, and it ends with Joseph and his brothers. And so what Jacob cannot resolve with his brother Esau, and that guilty secret he clings to, you know, remember his name means to cling by the heel. He clings to that guilty secret. He's not going to be able to resolve that in himself. But ultimately, in a story that I told another time about Joseph, ultimately that intergenerational scourge or stain or sin or guilt or whatever, that ultimately that intergenerational scourge is put to rest, is laid to rest, and Jacob's soul is alleviated because of the plight of his son Joseph and of Joseph's redemption, and where Jacob cannot show forgiveness to his brother, but most of all, Jacob cannot forgive himself, Joseph. Joseph is a font of forgiveness at the end of the book of Genesis. So this is something that I want you to keep in mind as the sun in Gemini forms a square to Saturn in Pisces this week.
This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life.